Well, hello.
Welcome back.
Hi.
To the Castro Files.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great.
Good.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much for joining us. We're on a roll. We've got a couple of episodes coming out in the next week or two.
Yep.
Thank you guys so much for joining us again. We appreciate it. It's fun getting back into the Castro Files. I love these stories. Some of the, just the creepiness of it, right?
Yeah, and they're fun.
I think the one that I have today hopefully will creep you out a
little
bit.
I'm excited.
It's a good story, but it really, hang in there because it's really at the end that you're going to be like, what the hell is going on with this? So, all right, I'm going to jump in.
I'm going to apologize in advance if I get a coughing fit. So just...
Allergies in Texas are trying to kill people.
Seriously, right now.
It's literally... A side note, we've both been sick for a while. Chest colds and stuff like that. The doctor that I called when I was making a reservation... A reservation for the doctor. An appointment. The nursing assistant or whomever answers the phone.
The receptionist?
Yes, that same
You're
person.
You're having a lot of problems with titles today.
She goes, yes, Texas is trying to kill you. And I was like, perfect. That's awesome.
That's
so,
awesome.
Again, bear with us if you hear a little...
throat clearing and coughing.
Yeah, it will be good, though. So, thanks again. All right, my story is from a creepypasta.
Okay.
My new neighbor might be Satan.
Oh, my.
Written by Maximilian Alexander.
Okay.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
All right. For as far back as I can remember, my family has always lived in and around Innsbruck. This peaceful little suburb outside of Richmond has a lot of history and charm. With a population of less than 10,000, this is a place where you are only a degree or two of separation away from anyone else in town. That old adage rings true, everyone knows everyone. My husband, our two adopted children, and myself lived in a two-story colonial red brick with white trim. Having a well-manicured and maintained yard near Cox Road, one of the two main roads that went through the small slice of heaven. While it's rare for any homes to come up for sale, the family across the street from us moved due to work relocation and a higher salary. In this housing market and the desirable location that this is of a single-family home, far enough away from the crazy city, but close enough to be connected. Once the Marshes put their home up for sale, it sold in less than a week. Been there, done that.
Right.
In no time, a large moving truck pulled up and began filling the empty house, making it a home for the new owner. Mm-hmm. My husband, Sam, was working on site at his office today, and I happened to be taking the week off from my stressful consulting job. Being the friendly across the street neighbor, I baked up a dozen double chocolate chip cookies to take over and introduce myself. I thought the same thing. Those are my favorite. As I approached the house, I could see four individuals wearing Nightfall Transit shirts. That's the name of the company on their shirt.
Okay.
A company I had not heard of before. I approached one of them. He was tall, had dark red hair, looking like he could use a bit of sunlight. Interesting company name you work for. The mover stops and acknowledges my presence. Absolutely. It is a small family-owned business named for the fact that day or night, we are here to perform. Some individuals need to move at the drop of a dime. Could be at 8 in the morning or 11 at night. He smiles and feels unnatural. The teeth look a little bit too white. The smile a little too wide. Here are a couple of business cards. My name is Amon Alcard Crowley.
Bless you.
Owner of Nightfall. If you ever need or require effective, fast, and easy-moving solutions, reach out to us anytime, day or night. While the other three movers continued moving furniture and boxes from the back of the truck, Ammon locked eyes with me, reaching out a slender, long hand. His eyes rippled, looking to be deep crimson.
Vampire.
That couldn't be right, as it's not a natural color. What an odd color for contacts, I thought to myself as I reached out with my free hand and grasped his hand. It feels cold to the touch. Not too strange. It's a bit chilly out for a late winter afternoon. After letting go, I take the business cards and pocket them, feeling a bit uneasy. I quickly divert attention to the plate of cookies. Are the new owners here already? I wanted to take a moment and introduce myself and bring them a welcome gift. Ammon shakes his head. Unfortunately not. Mr. Mortimer Ashcroft has not yet arrived. though he did provide explicit permission and instruction to deliver and set up his belongings, whether he was here or not. Ammon turns and starts making his way to the back of the truck so that he can get back to work. I'm sure that Mr. Ashcroft wouldn't be bothered if you were to just leave your gift on his kitchen counter. Yeah, okay, that sounds good. I think I'll just do just that. Thank you. I excused myself from the moving crew and walked up a few steps to the front door. I step inside and a certain indescribable heaviness sets on my shoulders. The air felt thick, dark even, considering the windows are wide open without any curtains set up yet. I can see the kitchen from across the front door, thanks to the open floor plan, and take a few steps across the living room. Feeling of being watched stops me in my tracks. There is no one in here, though. Ammon even telling me that the owner is not home. I look around, a dark, unlit hallway to one side, an open staircase on the other. A shift in movement in the corner of my eye catches my attention, and I look up to the stairs, to the upstairs landing, but nothing's there. Must have just been a shift in light from a cloud crossing the sun or something.
Makes sense.
I shiver with a bit of paranoia and walk quickly into the kitchen, placing the plate of cookies down on the dark granite countertop on the kitchen island. Seeing a small pad of paper and a pen on the ornate mahogany dinner table about 10 feet away, I wrote a quick note with my name and phone number on it, welcoming the Ashcroft family to the neighborhood. I haphazardly placed the piece of paper on top of the saran wrap covered baked delights, and started to beeline towards the front door to make my exit. Two of the movers carried in an impressively large framed painting, making me pause to allow them past me. The artwork was impressive, to say the least. It looked to be quite old, with deep, dark hues of blue on the edges, with a portrait of a very charismatic male figure. I'm no history buff, but based on the styling of the subject, he looked to be a middle-aged man from the 1600s.
Wow.
Must be a family heirloom passed down through the generations, I thought to myself. Once the pathway was clear and the team of movers were busy at work hanging this huge painting, I stepped out the front door and quickly made my way across the street back to the safety of my own home. Dark gray clouds began to roll in, so I made myself a hot cup of black tea and got lost in some relaxation time. Getting distracted in my novel, I forgot entirely about the feeling of being watched and the strange ambiance that was inside the Ashcroft home across the street. Nested in my comfortable armchair by the stone fireplace, the kids got home from school first. Our daughters, Beth and Naomi, came in into the family room where I was lost in my book, giving me a kiss on the cheek and excitedly filling me in on their school playground gossip.
That's cute.
By the time I was done hearing all of the drama about Jill's bloody nose and Mary being expelled from the circle because she also has a crush on Will that Jasmine already likes, my husband Sam pulled into the driveway. Saved by the husband. Since it was Friday, Sam and I decided to order pizza from one of our family's favorite Italian restaurants, Mama Cucina. We had it delivered through DoorDash, and we all settled down in front of the television, decide on what movie to watch. That's friendly for an 11 and a 9-year-old. We settled on the newer Disney Pixar flick, Elemental.
Okay.
Shortly after opening credits displayed on the tube, and the movie got started, I was alerted that the unhealthy but delicious pizza had arrived by the chime of our doorbell. I volunteered to retrieve the dinner for a movie, tossing the throw blanket covering my legs to the side and hightailed it to the front door. I opened the door and retrieved a box from the delivery driver, thanking them and began closing the door. Before I could latch the door, it closed. A flash of dull red caught my attention. I looked past the dasher, making their way back to their car, and noticed that the moving truck was gone, and now a midnight black Rolls-Royce Phantom was parked in the driveway, and an odd deep red glow was spilling from the house. This is what I was picturing from that. Something like kind of like a deep red, right? Kind of creepy.
Yep.
Evil.
That's a sequential scary house right there.
I stared for a minute, seeing if my eyes would adjust to the inside, trying to understand what was happening. I decided it was best to mind my own business.
I mean, maybe they just like disco lights in there.
Closing the door and taking dinner into the family room to watch a movie. After the movie ended and the kids retired to their rooms for the night, Sam and I got to have some quality time to ourselves. He filled me in on this big project that he and his boss assigned to him, new potential client that would bring a bunch of dollars to the firm. His boss had alluded that if Sam was successful in wrangling that client, that it would lead to promotion and possibly a raise.
Okay.
He finished up changing, getting changed into his pajamas, and he says, "How was your day, Theo? Have you ever seen our new neighbors yet?" I shook my head. My smile melted into a more stoic look. "No, I haven't. I baked a tray of cookies and took it over, hoping to meet them, but they weren't there yet. The mover said that the last name is Ashcroft. I left a plate of cookies and a note welcoming them to the neighborhood. Looks like they have arrived since. When the pizza arrived here, I noticed the car parked outside in the driveway and some lights inside the house. Maybe we can catch them tomorrow. Hopefully they're nice. Maybe they have some kids Naomi and Beth can play with. As if they need some more," Sam said, grinned widely, his sarcastic nature always peeking through. "Exactly what we need, Sam. More kids coming in and out of our house, emptying our pantry and making messes." I started to chuckle a bit, getting under the comforter and making myself cozy. We got settled into bed and I turned off the lights. Before closing my eyes, I noticed that the soft red glow I'd noticed coming from the windows across the street was bleeding into our room. Stretch out my legs, laid on my side, and closed my eyes, falling into a deep sleep. I opened my eyes suddenly and sat up with a feeling of dread and panic. A flashing of light followed by a rumble of thunder quickly illuminated the bedroom. I noticed Sam was not in bed, just me. With my senses heightened, I sat up and listened, trying to allow time for my eyes to adjust to the dark. A chilling breeze drafts across my back, followed by the sound of muffled crying. "Sam," I called out, "are you all right?" The bedroom door creaks open, a dull red glow pushing from the hallway. I slip my feet into my slippers and wrap my fleece robe around myself to counteract the freezing air that invaded our home. I hear a quiet sobbing turning into borderline wailing.
Wow.
I walk to the doorway, peek my head out, looking both left and right down the hallway corridor. "Sam, where are you? What's wrong?" To me, it looks like as though the hallway stretches out and the dim crimson illumination only began being bright enough for me to see about 20 or 30 feet ahead, then pitch darkness. Well, this should have stood out as odd to me, seeing as the hallway in our house is not that long. I was more determined to find Sam and help him out. I hear sobbing again. It sounds as though it's coming from the right side, so I start softly walking to the right to find him. This direction is where the kids' rooms are. And my story just jumped. Hang on. Don't you love that?
Yeah.
All right, there we go.
Okay.
This direction where the kids' rooms are. Why would he be in either Beth or Naomi's room? As I make my way down the passageway, a sanguine-colored lightning throbs in and out. Finally, after what feels like a solid 10 minutes of walking, I can see the doors to both Beth and Naomi's chambers. The rooms are positioned at the end of the hallway. Naomi's on the left and Beth's on the right, with a third wall with a picture window looking out. Perched underneath the console table that sits in the very front of underneath the window, I can see a very pale, gangly person curled up in a fetal position.
Okay, that's not creepy.
Their chest heaving in and out like they're hyperventilating. I can't make out who it is, though. It doesn't look like anyone in our family. I approach the figure, kneeling down, reaching out to touch them on the shoulder. Before my fingertips make contact with their body, the creature whips itself around and positions itself on its knees, getting right up in my face and screams an ear-shattering scream. The creature is as white as a ghost, no eyes, and its face elongates to scream. The skin breaks apart, and from where the mouth should be, tearing holes that open up into pitch black void in an alabaster
skin.
Holy crap,
what, he dropped some acid before he went to bed? Holy shnikes.
I stumble backwards in surprise, catching myself and standing up to turn around to flee. As I get turned around, I am now in my older daughter, Naomi's bedroom. Only the bed and the bedside table are illuminated. Naomi is laying in bed, looking perfect like a porcelain doll. And Sam is on his knees at her bedside. He's bent over, head laying on the bed next to her, bawling. Sam, what is happening? In between racking sobs, he responds with a very scratchy sounding voice. You did this. You brought this into our house, into our family. Sam grabs a handful of the blanket covering Naomi, squeezing it in anguish. I don't know what you're talking about. What did I do? What did I bring? Before I could finish asking, Sam bolted rigid straight. He sat there, still in silent, for about 5 seconds before bending straight back. A sound of bones popping and making my stomach crawl. Scorpioned himself. You did this. You did this. You did this. You did this. Sam kept shrieking over and over. His eyes rolled into the back of his head. The only thing that I could see was the whites of his eyes. Blood began streaming out of his ears, nose, and mouth. I reached up and clasped my hands over my ears, turning around to exit the room. I found myself now standing in front of our fireplace with a dramatic high-backed velvet chair. In the blink of an eye, the pyre inside it ignited into life. The radiant warmth felt nice, casting shadows from the chair and myself across the floor. I took a step closer to the fire, trying to peek around the back of the chair to see who, if anyone, was sitting in it. I was startled by a deep, smooth voice. What is the one thing in this world that you want the most? I don't know what you mean, I responded. Whatever you want most can be yours. You know what you need to do.
Rumpelstiltskin?
Hello? The mysterious voice stated. I walked forward and looked over the side of the chair, met with a shrieking, blood-oozing face of Sam, mere inches from my own. You did this! I awoke terrified, drenched in a cold sweat, heart pounding. It was still dark out. I grabbed my phone and looked to see the time. It was 3:13 a.m.
I knew it was going to be 3 o'clock.
I talked myself down, realizing it was just a nightmare. I laid myself back down, trying to get some sleep, which ended up being a failure.
You think? Hello?
After another few hours, I resigned myself to being tired through the day, getting out of bed and making coffee for Sam and myself. He and the kids stumbled into the kitchen over the next hour and a half, and they were bright and rested, myself being quite quiet and reserved, still admittedly shaken from the nightmare.
Yeah, I imagine.
The kids stomached a small breakfast, then disappeared into the family room to play, keeping themselves occupied for a while. Sam asked me, Theo, what's wrong? You look like you've seen a ghost. Taking the opportunity, I explained my nightmare to him. Sam wrapped an arm around me, giving me a side hug, made an effort to comfort me. He gets me distracted from thinking about it, suggesting we get dressed and go across the street to meet our new neighbors.
Oh, no. Because none of this crap started until he went across the street. Right? I'd be like, no, thank you.
I get out of my night clothes and change into some casual jeans and a hoodie. Together, we slip out the front door, walk over to our driveway, and start crossing the street. Before we even reach the other side, a man opens the door and comes outside, waving and greeting us. Good morning, gentlemen. I am Mort Ashcroft. I stop dead in my tracks as his voice matches the one I heard in my nightmare before Sam popped around the side of the chair, screaming into my face. He meets us at the end of the driveway, extending out in a hand. Sam reaches out and takes his hand. I can't help but stare into this in surreal disbelief. I take in the details of Mort's stature. Tall. He had to have been 6'6", salt and pepper hair, very strong facial bone structure. He was as pale as paper with piercing emerald eyes. Time dilated. I see Sam's mouth moving very slowly, no sound coming from him, from his direction as they clasp their hands and move at snail's pace. I hear Mort's voice in my head. What is the one thing in the world that you want the most? I am immediately snapped out of my fugue state as their hands detach and I hear Sam introduce me. And this is my husband, Theo. We're the Dubois. I pull myself together and act as normal as possible, reaching out my hand and exchange greetings with Mort. Yes, I'm Theo, and we have two girls, Beth and Naomi, who are wasting their Saturday on television. Do you have any kids, Mr. Ashcroft? I inquire, keeping the conversation momentum going. Regrettably not. It's just myself. Maybe one day, though. I hope to be around for a while longer. Only time will tell. Would you both please come in for a moment? I have a pitcher of mimosas ready to enjoy. You can pretty much... I'll come over for some mimosas.
Yeah, heck yeah.
I'm just saying. Whatever.
And those cookies? You give me mimosas and those double chocolate cookies?
Come on. All right.
Perfect Saturday.
Come over for some mimosas to enjoy and your devilishly wonderful cookies you left yesterday.
Told you.
Ding, ding, ding. Oh, you didn't hear the devilishly wonderful?
I was concentrating on the cookies.
More gestures to his face, to face the door. A perfectly pearly smile adorns his charismatic face. Sam accepts the invitation for both of us and begins walking up to the drive up the driveway to Mr. Ashcroft's door. I'm left behind, still not sure I know what is reality anymore. Am I still dreaming? I don't think so. I pinch myself and come to a conclusion that I'm very much awake. I must be letting myself imagine my imagination run wild. So to be polite, I follow Sam and Mort into the home. Mort Ashcroft is an entirely charming individual, throwing out jokes at the appropriate times while being in a splendid host with refreshments. We drink through the entire pitcher of mimosas and finish the cookies before we are interrupted by the shrill scream coming from our home. The girls, I immediately get up and look out the front window. Beth is out front screaming her head off, pointing inside the house. Sam and I bolt out of Mort's home and get to her in a flash. She's to the point of hyperventilating, relying on us to relaying to us that her and Naomi saw a snake in the house. Okay, yeah, that's alarming. But I thought so much worse could have happened. We thank Mr. Ashcroft for being so hospitable and excuse ourselves to take care of our home. He heads back to his own house, waving courteously as he enters his home and closes the front door. Sam and I go into our home, find, catch, and remove the snake into the yard.
Oh, what was
that? Strange enough that it's in the middle of the cold winter.
That there's a snake, yeah.
But weirder things have happened, I suppose.
Not really.
Yeah,
I'm just saying.
The rest of the day went fairly routine for a Saturday. Naomi got into a fight with Beth because Beth had taken Naomi's hairbrush. Sam made a succulent roast, which I had to tease him about it for being dry. The kids went to their rooms and to talk and to text their friends about the woes of weekend homework. Nighttime came, slumber took over the neighborhood. I'm awakened to the familiar sounding voice. You can have your deepest desire for a small cost. My eyes popped open. I immediately recognized that I was not in my head and I was not in our bed.
Okay.
I was laying on the floor in the living room in front of the couch. Sit up, looking for the source of the voice that awakened me. It sounded too real. My rattled brain taking a moment to realize that I'm not in bed, where I fell asleep. I heard the sound of glass breaking, making me stand up quickly. I noticed in my rigid position the symbol that I was laying on, a flash of lightning illuminating the living room. I'm quickly made aware that the symbol is everywhere, on the walls, all over the floor, on the furniture, even weird. It looks like and smells like it was drawn in blood of some sort.
Ew.
As the light dies out from the lightning, five candles erupt into flame, positioned around the symbol I had been standing on in the middle, or standing in the middle of. I hear Beth shriek an ear-shattering scream. In dad mode, I bolt out of the living room and push my way into Beth's room. I'm met with an office space. Dramatic blood-red curtains frame a large picture with an oversized oak desk in front of it. Mort Ashcroft sat in the chair on the other side of the desk from me, motioning for me to take a seat in the vacant seat. Where's Beth? Mort chuckles. Worry not. She is safe and sound, asleep like a little babe. She is merely having a bad dream. That is why she screamed out. Why are you here, in her room? I choke out, tears starting to fill my eyes. Mort stares into my soul, his poker face unnerving. He blinks, his eyes changing from bright violet into a matching blood red of the curtains. You did this. You have a desire. I have an answer. It is a simple quid pro quo. Nothing more, nothing less. What did I do? I lose control, screaming out. I want to jump over the desk and start shaking, Mort. I start shaking, though, and decide to slump down into the chair right next to me. A condescending yet wicked-looking smile crosses his face. Well, that's a $100,000 question, isn't it? You were a good neighbor. You were. You got my attention, which is fortunate for you, unfortunate for someone else. Mr. Ashcroft reaches his hand into his jacket pocket and pulls out a black remote control. He presses the button and the floor opens. Howls and screams fill the room, making me sick to my stomach. A wave of heat hits me in the face as I realize that I'm looking into the pit of hell.
Yeah.
Flames lick up into the air from the pit. I am able to make out tortured faces in the flames. I can even start hearing individual pleas for help. You're dying, Mr. Dubois. You know it, but haven't told anyone in your family yet. You're afraid that this is where you will end up, which I do say the chances are looking mighty good.
Yikes!
So many skeletons in your closet. He snaps his fingers. The hole closes and the ground closes up and the sound of the earth, like a sound of an earthquake. I know what you want already. You just need to ask for it. I feel a hand on my shoulder, turning my head. I'm shaking to see that Beth's standing there. Her eyes are missing, mouth sewn shut, and her chest is hollow cavity.
Oh, my gosh.
Ribs cracked open and spread out. Boils and blisters cover her skin, half of her hair is singed off.
My goodness.
I wake up. In reality, I'm standing in Naomi's room. Right at the side of her bed, my nose starts to bleed. I could feel the warm moisture dripping down my face and soaking the front of my pajamas. I collapse and everything blacks out. I wake up again. In a hospital, Sam is half asleep in the chair beside me. I groan as I try to move. I definitely must have bruised something as my body is sore. Sam realizes that I'm alert, so he stands up, comes over to the bed, and gives me a big hug. What were you doing in Naomi's room at 3 a.m, Theo? You woke us all up. You scared us. I told him that I must have started sleepwalking, that I came into her room and then immediately collapsed. I apologized profusely, not wanting to scare him or my family. That's why I haven't told any of them about my terminal diagnosis for pancreatic cancer.
Oh, shit.
The doctor came in. While we were embracing each other after asking me several questions of my symptoms and what led to me being here at St. Mary's, after I explained to her my story, she ordered a CT scan of my brain just to make sure nothing was off, and a panel of blood work. A few hours later, she came in and sat down, announcing she had some news. The cat was out of the bag now, as she announced that the cancer had spread to my brain.
Oh, geez.
Sam learned that the cancer was terminal and that I was looking at only a year, maybe two, left to live. Both of us were beside ourselves in tears. We discussed addressing this with our kids and how we were going to proceed the rest of our lives together. Shortly thereafter, I got discharged and sent home. By this point, it was already getting late again, so we picked up some fast food to take home and for the kids to have dinner, as neither of us had any energy to prepare anything to eat.
Understandably.
The kids ate, went to bed. Sam had his emotions get the best of him, and he started screaming at me, wondering how I knew and didn't tell him or trust him enough all this time. Were you just going to wait to drop dead for me to find out, he asked. Well, no. I just didn't know when would be the right time or even how, I began answering. He cut me off, going hysterical. When you found out would have been the right time. The screaming went on for what felt like forever. We decided that I would sleep on the couch.
Wait, he's the one dying. Shouldn't the other guy sleep on the couch?
I think he got, his husband got pissed off, right? I mean, it's part of life. Like, yeah, F you, get the hell out, go sleep on the couch. You're not dead yet, right? The screaming went on for what it felt like forever. We decided that I would sleep on the couch tonight. We decided, right? Mm-hmm. Just to give us some healthy space to process feelings. Even though he was hurt, he still told me he loved me before locking himself in our bedroom. I could hear him sobbing from our room. After a couple of hours of laying there, stuck in my own thoughts, I fell asleep. My eyes opened, and I was inside Mort Ashcroft's living room.
3 o'clock, I bet, again.
The sun was out. Birds were chirping. Everything felt phenomenal. I saw this serving tray with two mimosas on it, so I walked over and grabbed one. I found a seat on a very comfortable leather sofa. I take a sip of my mimosa, and I hear, "Are you ready to ask for what you desire the most?" I look around and don't see Mort. That was very much his voice, though, but he was nowhere to be seen. "Up here," the voice chimes in again. I look up and notice the regal painting I saw on the when the movers were unloading the truck. My eyes widened with fear as the painting was what was talking to me. "This will be your last chance to ask. After my third attempt, I don't bother anymore," it said, the colors on the canvas swirling in a hypnotic fashion. It was captivating but intimidating. "I don't know. I mean, yes, I do know, but I don't," I managed to stammer out. "Would it be easier if you said it to me instead of myself?"
Wait, what?
"Would it be easier if you said it to me instead of myself?" I don't know. Okay. A voice to my left ear filled my ears. To my left, filled my ears, sorry. I'd looked over and saw Mort sitting right next to me. While still feeling the watchful glare of the painting, either way, you were talking to me. That painting is just a little something I had commissioned by a certain Leonardo da Vinci. I may be old, but I'm still proud of how I age so well. Ashcraft chuckles. Wait, are you? My mind couldn't think of the word I was actually thinking. Instead of what came out was an angel? He looks side to side as if looking to if anyone was here with us listening, then smiles in response. Something like that. What do you want? I start crying. Knowing my time is limited, I don't want to die. I want to live. I have cancer, and they are only giving me. Mort raises his hand, stopped me from going into rambling tirade. You want to beat cancer. You want to live. Well, I can give that to you for a small cost. Nothing is free, Mr. Dubois.
Small my ass.
What does it cost? I managed to get out, wiping the tears from my eyes, feeling a little bit of hope. Don't worry, Mr. Dubois. You have paid your desire while we have been talking. You're talking. You paid in your sleep. Isn't that wonderful? He grins, reaching out his hand to shake mine. I reluctantly reach out and take his hand. A moment of hesitation taking me over in a last second. All I need to do is pay for it with sleep? Absolutely, Mr. Dubois. Now, when you wake up, you'll be cancer-free. Congratulations and welcome to the rest of your life. He stood up and walked to his doorway. He opened the door and motioned for me to exit. Now, if you'll excuse me, I don't mean to be rude, but I have another engagement I need to take care of this day. So I gathered myself, get up and walk out of the house. I'm surrounded by bright, warm sunlight. It feels amazing on my skin. I hear the door close behind me and I turn around. It's been a week since I woke up in our room. I was standing by the side of the bed. You ready for this? Sam lay dead under my hands. I strangled him to death. Blood was running out of his eyes from the pressure I had put on his throat. I screamed the most blood-curdling scream I could muster. I was covered in blood with no recollection of what had happened. I saw the clock.
Three.
It was 3:30 a.m. I ran out of our room, and I saw the girls' bedroom doors were open. I found Beth folded in her closet, her eyes cut out, and her chest sliced open, an empty cavity gaping at me with her heart and lungs making a trail of blood and gore from her bed to the closet. Naomi was in her bed, her throat slit, laying in a pool of her own blood.
Holy shit.
I grabbed the keys to my vehicle and got out of there with just my wallet and a pair of clothes. I needed to get my story straight before they caught me. I needed people to know the truth. I am not a killer. It was not me. It was something controlling my body while I slept. It has been 5 days since I left our house. I'm in deep mourning and have not decided if I should end my own life or take prison time. The story has been all over the news, reports of police and state marshals looking for me. I called in a tip to the local police that I'm hiding out in a seedy little motel outside Philadelphia. I can see the lights coming down the road and hear the sirens. Please be careful of new neighbors. Sometimes they're not quite what they seem. It's 8:57 p.m. and we are getting new reports that the suspect from the Dubois homicide case has been apprehended in a no-tell motel north of Philadelphia. Police and sheriffs arrive shortly after 8 to Theo Dubois locked in his room at his den of inequity. The reporter and a woman in her 40s looking coiffed and caked with makeup to try and improve her appearance on HDTV continue to recite. The suspect threatened to take his own life if his demands were not met. He went on to scream incoherent things about the devil and a man named Mort Ashcroft. Our affiliates in Virginia will continue to look into this, as this is a new detail into the case. Allegedly, this Mr. Ashcroft just moved in across the street from the Dubois family and is being identified as a person of interest. As of now, there is no record of anyone purchasing the home, and it's still listed on the market. She turns her head to look at another camera before continuing to report. That Theo Dubois did attempt to take his own life using a firearm to shoot himself in the head. The suspect did survive miraculously and is expected to recover fully. Stay tuned with us here at WDVL as the story continues to develop.
Wait, what?
WDVL? Devil. DVL.
Yeah.
Mm. With a sinister chuckle, Mort turns off the television that is mounted on his new home as he sees his new neighbor walking up the driveway to introduce themselves in a warm, tropical Miami suburb.
That's horrible. People are trying to be nice and he's making them kill people.
The devil is out there. And this is what I was picturing.
The first creature?
This would be him if his, earthly body.
I see this as the thing that melted was at the hallway. Away.
Something like that,
the
right?
The hallway where he saw the gangly creature.
Something like that, right? I'm like, excuse me. So yeah.
And then I imagine him being as handsome as the guy that plays the devil on that Fox show.
I know which one. Yeah, I can't remember.
Think of the name of the show. Yeah. But yeah, very handsome, very debonair.
Born in the 16 or whatever.
Maybe. I don't.
But he's the devil.
Understand why he did that to him.
Because he's the devil.
I know, but all he did was take him cookies. He was quite kind.
The devil comes in many different.
So when he said ways, you do it in your sleep, he just required him to kill his family.
He was doing it while he was talking. That's what I'm saying.
His return in payment was
three souls.
That's horrible.
Isn't that gnarly?
I don't like that story. It was sad. Not really. I liked it, but.
Oh, it's angry.
It's angry.
It's angry.
Yeah.
Durr.
Like when I don't like the end of a movie, angry. That was a good story, though.
You liked it?
Yeah.
All right, good. Yeah. I hope you guys liked that one. It was a little longer, but go out, check out the Castro Files out on iTunes and Spotify. Give us a review if you don't mind.
If you're listening to this, go ahead.
It's going
to
be on Under the Bar is Open with Beth and Greg. That's where we post all of our other shows as well, but you can find these out there. And then
if you were listening along on Spotify or a iBean or one of those, you can see the pictures.
iBean?
What is it?
iTunes?
No, yes, iTunes.
Podbean?
Podbean and iTunes. But if you're listening on those, you can see the pictures on our Instagram page.
Yep, out at Castro Files.
Yeah. So go and take a look there.
Check out that too.
Trying not to cough.
That's okay. Yeah. I know. It's Texas is trying to kill us. We talked about that. All right. Thank you so much. We will catch you next time.
Bye, guys.
Have a great one. See ya.